Bantam Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents The Ranch by Danielle Steele. In any other supermarket, the woman walking down the aisle pushing a cart between canned goods and gourmet spices would have looked strangely out of place. She had impeccably groomed shoulder-length brown hair, beautiful skin, huge brown eyes, a trim figure, perfectly done nails, and she was wearing a navy linen suit that looked as though she had bought it in Paris. She wore high-heel navy blue shoes, a navy Chanel bag, and everything about her was perfection. She could have easily pretended she'd never seen a supermarket before, but she looked surprisingly at home here. In fact, she often stopped at Gristiti's at Madison and 77th on the way home. Most of the shopping was done by their housekeeper, but in a funny, old-fashioned way, Mary Stuart Walker liked doing the shopping herself. She liked cooking for Bill at night when he came home, and they had never had a cook, even when the children were younger. Despite the impeccable way she looked, she liked taking care of her family and attending to every minute detail of her household. Their apartment was at 78th and 5th, with a splendid view of Central Park. They had lived there for 15 of the nearly 22 years of their marriage. Mary Stuart kept an impressive home. The children teased her sometimes about how perfect everything always was, how everything had to look and be just right, and it was easy to believe that about her. Just looking at her, it was easy to see that she was somewhat compulsive about it. Even at 6 o'clock on a hot June evening in New York, after 6 hours of meetings, Mary Stuart had just put on fresh lipstick, and she didn't have a hair out of place. She looked just as perfectly put together as she had when she left home at 10 o'clock that morning. She selected 2 small steaks, 2 baking potatoes, fresh asparagus, some fruit, and some yogurt, remembering too easily the days when her shopping cart had been filled with treats for the children. She always pretended to disapprove, but couldn't resist buying the things they saw on TV and said they wanted. It was a small thing in life, spoiling them a little bit, indulging them. Bubblegum-flavored cereal was so important to them. She never could see the point of forcing them to eat a healthy one they'd hate and refusing to buy the one they really wanted. Like most people in their world in New York, she and Bill expected a great deal from their children. A high standard for everything. Near-perfect grades, impressive athletic ability, complete integrity, high morals. And as it turned out, Alisa and Todd were good-looking, bright and shining in every way, outstanding in and out of school, and basically very decent people. Bill had teased them ever since they were young and told them that he expected them to be the perfect kids. He and their mother were counting on it, in fact. By the time they were 10 and 12, Alisa and Todd groaned whenever they heard the words. But there was more than a little truth to the speech, and they knew it. What their father really meant was that they had to do their absolute best in and out of school, perform at the top of their ability. And even if they didn't always succeed, they had to try hard. It was a lot to expect of anyone, but Bill Walker had always set high standards, and they met them. As rigid as their mother seemed to be sometimes, it was their father who was the real perfectionist, who expected it all from them, and from their mother. It was Bill who really put the pressure on all of them, not just his children, but his wife as well. Mary Stuart had been the perfect wife to him for nearly 22 years, providing him with the perfect home, the perfect children, looking beautiful, doing what was expected of her, entertaining for him and keeping a home that not only landed them on the pages of Architectural Digest, but was a happy place to come home to. There was nothing showy or ostentatious about their way of life. It was all beautifully done, meticulously handled. And Mary Stuart made it all look effortless, although most people realized it couldn't be as easy as she made it seem. But that was her gift to him, making it all seem easy. For years, she had organized charity events which raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for important charities, sat on museum boards, and worked ceaselessly assisting the cause of injured, diseased, or seriously underprivileged children. And now, at 44, with the children more or less grown, For the past 3 years, she'd been doing volunteer work with physically and emotionally handicapped children in a hospital in Harlem. She kept extraordinarily busy, particularly now with no children to come home to, and Bill constantly working late at the office. He was one of the senior partners in a law firm on Wall Street. He handled all of their most important cases relating to Germany and England. And the things Mary Stuart did socially had always done a great deal to enhance his reputation. She entertained beautifully for him, and always had, although this year had been very quiet. He had spent much of the year traveling abroad, particularly for the past several months, preparing a massive trial in London. Alisa was spending her junior year at the Sorbonne, so Mary Stuart had more time to herself this year. It had given her a chance to catch up on a lot of things. She took on some additional charity work, did a lot of reading, and volunteered at the hospital on weekends. Or sometimes, on Sundays, she just indulged herself and stayed in bed with a book or devoured all of the New York Times. She had a full and busy life, and to look at her, no one would ever have suspected there was anything lacking. Mary Stuart had everything most people wanted. And yet as one looked at her, one sensed an edge of sadness. It was a kind of compassion one felt more than saw, a loneliness perhaps, which seemed odder. How could anyone with Mary Stuart's looks and style, accomplishments and family, be lonely? When one sensed that about her, divining her with the heart rather than the eyes, it seemed strange and unlikely, and made one question one's own intuitions about her. There was no reason to suspect that Mary Stuart Walker was lonely or sad, and yet if one looked hard enough at her, one knew she was. Behind the elegant facade, there was something tragic about her.
"How you doing today, Mrs. Walker?"
The man at the checkout grinned at her. He liked her. She was beautiful, and she was always polite to him. She asked about his family, his wife, his mother for years before she died. "I'm fine, Charlie. Thank you. It's hot today, isn't it?" she said. But she didn't look it. She never did. She looked calm and cool and unruffled. She was just one of those people. She looked as though nothing ever went wrong. She never lost control, and certainly never lost her temper.
"They say it's gonna be even hotter tomorrow," he said as he bagged her things and saw her glance at the Enquirer and then frown in disapproval.
Tanya Thomas, the singing megastar, was on the cover. The headline said, "Tanya headed for another divorce. Affair with trainer breaks up marriage." There were terrible photographs of her, an inset of the muscle-bound trainer in a T-shirt, and another of her current husband fleeing from the press, hiding his face as he disappeared into a nightclub. Charlie glanced at the headlines and shrugged.
"That's Hollywood. They all sleep around out there. It's a wonder they even bother to get married."
"Don't believe everything you read," Mary Stuart said somewhat sternly, and he looked at her and smiled. Her gentle brown eyes looked troubled.
"You're too nice about everyone, Mrs. Walker. They're not the same kind of people we are, believe me."
He knew. He had seen some movie people come in regularly over the years, with different men and women all the time. They were a pretty jazzy crowd. They were a totally different kind of human being from Mary Stuart Walker. He was sure she didn't even understand what he was saying. The building she went home to on Fifth Avenue was solid and old and very handsome. And the view from their floor-through apartment was spectacular, particularly in winter, when Central Park was blanketed with snow and the skyline across the park stood etched in sharp contrast. It was lovely in summer, too. Everything was lush and green, and from their vantage point on the 14th floor, everything looked so pretty and peaceful. You could hear no noise from below, see none of the dirt, sense none of the danger. Mary Stuart walked the length of the apartment to the large, clean, white kitchen, put the groceries away and turned the oven on. Then she left the kitchen and walked to the small den where she often did her paperwork. They kept the answering machine there, and she flipped it on and heard Elisa's voice instantly. It made her smile just to hear her. "Hi, Mom. Sorry I missed you.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?